In the languages of antiquity, but in particular in Greek, there were a couple of ways to talk about the phenomenon which I'm going to be describing here in the next few minutes. We could use the Greek word ekklesia. Now, you can change the Greek K's for Latin C's, and it's still the word ekklesia, but the word ekklesia. Now, if you stop and think about various modern languages, here is French, église, here is Spanish, iglesias, here is Italian, chiesa. This word comes from the Greek kalio, to call, ek kalio, to call out. In a certain way, in other words, ecclesia lays a certain stress on a gathered, a called community of people. There's another word, kyriakon. Kyrios, in Greek, lord, ruler, exalted one. Okay? Think of some other languages. Think of English, church. Think of German, Kirche. These words derive ultimately from the word kyriakon, which means a lord's house. It can mean a temple, but eventually, of course, it can mean a church. Something, if you will, physical, tangible, sturdy, existing. So we may think of the church, then, as something abstract, as a community of people whose bonds are not visible, not evident, not obvious, or we may think of it as something sturdy, stable, and solid. That building over there, that church over there, that structure over there. Now, in a way, what these two ways of thinking about church provide for us is a sort of a creative tension that plays right down through the entire history of Christianity. Now, in the various churches, in the various towns of the Roman world, and you may recall this again from our discussion of the rise and spread of Christianity, the key Christian official was a bishop. Now, the bishops gradually became important personages in their towns. Slowly but surely, they came from higher and higher and higher social origins. And as the Roman state became more intrusive, as it commanded people's loyalties the less, the ecclesiastical authorities were able to claim people's loyalties the more. As populations began to reorient themselves a little bit in Christian directions, then, not surprisingly, they sought the advice, but also the leadership of their Christian authorities. Now think, too, about these bishops. They wore distinctive clothing, just as, for example, the great Romans had worn distinctive clothing, or perhaps Romans who held particular offices wore stripes or bands on their toga to designate, for instance, that they were of senatorial rank. Bishops controlled important forms of patronage. As the churches began to acquire property, wealth, and so on, the bishops controlled that wealth. Bishops could intervene with public authorities to help people out who had gotten themselves into legal scrapes of one kind or another. And, of course, bishops, as professional prayers, also sort of managed patronage between this world and the next. So there were various ways in which we can actually see bishops maintaining roles that key people in the Roman system had always played. And gradually they are from the same elite families who had always ruled the Roman world. So in a very interesting way here, we see again this remarkable process of continuity and change. Much has changed, and nothing has changed. Now, institutionally, the key step is the emergence of the bishops of Rome, whom we call the popes. Now, papa was in antiquity, in Latin or in Greek, a term of endearment. It is still the case today that the bishop of Rome is the official title of the person we call the pope. Pope is not an official title. You don't do anything because you're pope. You are pope because you're the bishop of Rome. So, in antiquity, it was a term of endearment, papa, daddy. You see? So our key issue is to see the emergence of the popes, of the bishops of Rome, to leadership throughout the Christian community of the Mediterranean world. How did this happen? Well, according to several basic principles and as a result of several basic historical processes. Principles first. The notion of apostolic succession, that there was a succession to the apostles, to the original 12 apostles, they who, at the end of Matthew's gospel, had been commanded, go forth and teach. Their teaching office, their command, the command which they received to go and teach, it was believed, was handed on to successor after successor after successor. Churches in antiquity, for example, kept long lists of their bishops and tried very hard to prove, and sometimes even to invent stories, that their bishops reached back to one or another of the apostles. So important did the notion of apostolic succession seem to people. And there are churches in the Mediterranean world that can, as I say, trace their lineage from today right back to one of the apostles. Rome was particularly important because it was doubly apostolic. Peter and Paul.